Hey, Dad, I just want to say thanks so much for coming to the games each weekend. It's always nice to have you on the sidelines supporting me and supporting the team.
Oh, I actually only come for the sausage guy.
Hey, this is Craig Dills from Media.
This is DJ Kaya.
This is Elliot D'Souza.
Hey, this is Jason D'Souza from Aldona.
Hey, this is Nash Lobo from Aldona.
This is Pascal D'Souza from Calgary.
Hey, this is Rohit D'Almeida.
Hey, this is Roland Mascarenhas.
Hey, guys, this is Ron Montero from Localin.
Hi, this is Roy Fernandez from Donna Paula.
This is Ryan D'Souza from Cuba.
Hey, this is Steffi DeCruz.
Hey, this is Tony Nazareth, and you are listening to...
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
And you're listening to the GSL Podcast.
Welcome everyone back to another episode of the GSL Podcast. My name is Wendell. Great to have you all back listening. Today we have a great episode lined up for you. The season is slowly coming to a close, so today's episode will be focusing a lot more on the upcoming playoffs. So look forward to that, and let's jump right into the news. First up in the news, the Lotulim versus Kolva game that was supposed to take place last Sunday has been rescheduled for August 31st. According to the GSL Insider, this was at the request of Kolva. So good on Lotulim for accepting their request. And I just want to tell something that's been getting on my radar a little bit. Now, first things first, when I say something's on my radar, that means it's something very peripheral. It's completely speculation. It's all about a hunch. It's not based on any evidence, any facts. It's really just kind of something that's come into my mind and something I want to share. Usually it's something that's a little bit controversial. So first thing I'd like to talk about is this rescheduling of the Kolva-Lotulim game. Specifically, Kolva's motives for this rescheduling. Now, as I said, this is on my radar, but maybe Kolva is missing a bunch of people. Maybe it's a family wedding, maybe a cottage, maybe a bunch of people can't make it. There could be a million reasons why this is a legitimate reschedule. But the reason it's on my radar is, this is the second year in a row this has happened, where Kolva has rescheduled one of the later games of the season and played it after the final week of games. What this means is Kolva has one more game in hand that can pretty much let them know exactly what result they want for the optimal playoff seeding. Now, many of you might be thinking, oh, it doesn't matter what the table shows, you want to win every game, you want to win your last game. And yeah, that's true in general most of the time. But let's say Kolva won in the last game of the season, knowing that if they won, they'd play Aguada in the quarterfinals in a 4-5 matchup, for example. Or if they lost, they'd actually play Margao because they would finish 5th and Margao would finish 4th and Aguada would stay 3rd. Something like that. Like, obviously the math isn't exact there because I'm just making up a scenario. Maybe they would have an incentive to tie the game or lose the game or maybe not play their full strength and rest them for the playoffs. So it's all on my radar a little bit, Kolva. I'm not really sure what's going on here. Maybe it's a legitimate reason for why you rescheduled. I'm sure I'm going to get like 17 emails from Jeremy Pinto, Jason Diaz, telling... Although Jason's been kind of quiet this year, but maybe this will be his first email to me explaining that, you know, it was a different reason. But just saying, you know, it's a little bit convenient that 2 years in a row now they have the last game of the season and they can choose exactly where they want to finish for the playoffs. All right, that's it for the news. Let's get into some match recaps. Alright, first up we have Aldona versus Margao. This was a game that, you know, I'm going to spare you all of the mathematical details and kind of huge playoff ramifications. I'm going to go into that a little bit more later, but suffice it to say, just trust me on this, that the game we lost to Aguada in the middle of the week was a very, very, very important game for us from a statistics and playoff outlook point of view. Even tying would have been okay. Winning would have been the best, obviously, but losing to them really, really messed up kind of our outlook on the playoffs and our standings. So going into this game, pretty much we're playing Margao this week and then Mops the next week. The actual individual games didn't really matter. It's really we just needed to win one of the two games. Unfortunately for us, we're missing a number of starters, including myself. I couldn't play with a strained hamstring. And Abel said Margao was missing a lot of players too. So I was hoping for an even game, maybe see a little bit of the bench from each team in action. But when I got there, I saw that Bradley was there, Dwayne was there, Gavin was there, Elton was there, and Brendan was there. So I'm not really sure who they were missing. They even had their goalkeeper. So unfortunately, Margao pretty much at full strength, I feel. That kind of showed. Throughout the game, it was pretty much back and forth. No team really having massive clear-cut chances. But the thing is, Margao has a lot of very smart players. For example, Gavin DeMello started off on the bench and wasn't really involved in the play that much when he came on. But Once he entered play, you could tell there was a certain calmness to the team. He was able to hold up the ball, pass it around, not have as much as an impact as he used to have. I feel like he used to be one of the very dominant players, whereas now he's playing more a peripheral role. He actually confided in me that he is trying to give the younger players on the team a run around and gain them more confidence. So a very smart play by him. Aguada had crossed the ball over, and he just kind of nudged our player in the goalie, just enough to put the goalie off with Ryden, you know, punching the ball out, but it going to another Margot player, heading the ball in the net. On the website, it's listed as Dwayne Lobo Perez, but I think from my memory, I don't think it was Dwayne. I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't Dwayne that headed the ball in, but that put them up 1-0 in the first half, and we were very, very angry about this goal, as you can imagine, because we felt like our keeper was fouled, but the ref didn't see it. The linesman said it wasn't his job to call that. So, you know, that you got to take what calls you get in the game, and it was 1-0 Margot leading into the half. Going into the second half was a little bit more of the same. We were trying to get back in the game, and we knew one goal could change everything, especially since earlier on in the game, Calvin Rosero had done a very nice shot from outside the 18-yard box and gone over the keeper and hit the top of the crossbar. That was actually at 0-0, but kind of more of the same. Margot having good possession, but not really creating too many chances, with us not being able to take control of the middle and really assert ourselves in the game, unfortunately. So overall, I would say Margot would probably say it was a comfortable win for them, 2-0. Second goal in the second half coming from Stefan Rebell. A little bit sloppy defense on our part, the ball bouncing around, and Stefan coming with the right shot, going across the field to the bottom left corner of the net. So a nice goal by him. You could tell his teammates were celebrating with him. He's a younger player. They were very happy for him to score. But this brings up a larger issue. As I said, this game, you know, it wasn't as important as, for example, next week's game, as we really have to win against Mopsa now that we lost today. But the most important thing is looking from the overall perspective as far as where these teams are going. As I said, for us, you know, people were messaging earlier in the season, could this be Aldana's year, undefeated season, first place? And as I said then, and I say right now, nothing matters until you get to the end and you look back. At one point, we were undefeated, flying high, first in the league. Now, two losses in a row, struggling to maintain our second place, worried about our playoff seating. So things can change in a blink of an eye. And it just goes to show how hard it is at the top of the league, which is great. It means that there's good competition and you can't really coast into anything. The second thing about Margot now is I feel like Margot has now shifted. I've said that, you know, they've lost that fear factor. And they used to be the only team I really didn't look forward to playing, not only because of their talent, but, you know, they're a very abrasive and brash team. So sometimes they can rub people the wrong way. But I just find I, for the first time, you know, not being able to play, but just watching the whole game 90 minutes, I think I've realized why they've lost that fear factor. And it's because Margot has sneakily been doing kind of a full team rebuild right after they finished that dynasty. If you look at their team, they have an amazing core with Bradley at center defense and Dwayne in center mid. And Gavin, when he's fit, either playing in center forward role or back, those three up the spine we've always said have been amazing for them. Elton now, unfortunately, has become older, doesn't play as much, and has kind of lost his stride. But he was key for them back in the day in their dynasty. So they've had this core down the spine. But if you look at them playing now, Dwayne is still very good in the middle. Not as dominant as he used to be, but still a very, very good player, like top caliber in the league. Bradley is still the best defender in the league. He was voted that last year. And I still believe, and I think it would be the league consensus at this point, that he still is the best defender in the league. Not only is he very powerful on the ball, he's very hard to beat with speed. He has great speed, but he's a shorter defender. So the one thing you think you could have an advantage of over him is winning the ball in the air or physicality. But he's extremely strong on the ball, and he actually has a great verticality. So he can jump, he can win headers. So you can tell they just have so much confidence in him in any scenario, even in the middle of the 18-yard box. They pass back to him. They have no issues with him. So they still have the best defender in the league. They have a great center midfielder. But I just find around that, they have a lot of like players that used to be very dominant for them but are kind of fading slowly, like past their prime. And then they have these really young, raw players that they're trying to develop. So I think the future of Margot will develop on whether or not these young, raw talent actually develop into what they want them to become. One player I'd like to spotlight is Braden. Braden Pereira is a young player. He plays center mid for them, and I love what they're doing with him. They're really trying to develop him. They do a lot of plays through him. They constantly try and get him involved in the offense and depend on him to do a lot of distribution and passing from the middle. And when it came to them having some very dangerous free kicks outside the 18-yard box, immediately the entire team said, Braden, this one's yours, Braden, you take it. So they're really trying to groom this kid for the future. So as I said, I think Margot's future will rely on the development of these young, raw talents that they have on their team. I think right now you're seeing a little bit of rust, and that's why they've struggled last year and this year with more consistent results. And when I say struggle, remember, this was a team that went like 18-0, 19-0, like didn't lose a game for almost 2 years, I think. It was absolutely insanity. So that's what I mean by a struggling. It's relative, obviously. So interesting to see how they do this season. I'm really interested to see who they line up with against the playoffs. I would not want to see them in the quarterfinals. So everyone's trying to avoid that 4-5 matchup against them because I think that's where they're going to end up. Next up, we have Donna Paula versus Aguada. This is a game, unfortunately, ended in another blowout. Aguada winning 10-0. Goal scorers were Kreif with one, Ian Fernandez with one. It says Ian Fernandez here on the website, but underneath it says Captain Canada. So I guess Captain Canada with one goal, Stefan Edwards with one goal, Matthew Pace with one goal, and Steven Fernandez with six. Yes, you heard me, six goals. And this is something that's going to be the majority of my recap. So obviously, you know, just to summarize, Donna Paula, another crushing loss. But as Abel said last week, they don't have a goalkeeper. So if you don't have a proper goalie, I mean, you're asking to get destroyed by teams like Aguada with so many lethal finishers. Donna Paula in the offseason really, really, really needs to focus on trying to get a goalkeeper. Even if it's just a decent keeper, someone that's dedicated to playing goalie for them, gives them some consistency. They don't have to put a player in net, which means they have another person playing out that's, you know, playing in their proper role and might actually help the team. So an unfortunate loss for them. I really do feel for them and their team. Really under the gun going through these losses. But at the same time, as I said, Aguada, so much firepower. That's just what you're risking without having a proper keeper. But that brings me to my main topic for this recap. Steven Fernandez, six goals, reaching 18 for the season. Obviously, he's going to win the Golden Boot. We've known that for a while. The next player, Nikhil Cadbet from Kolva, is only on seven goals. So congratulations to him for winning the Golden Boot. Now, obviously, this means he's also broken the record for most goals in a single season, which was previously set at 16. But as everyone knows, I mean, I've ragged on this so many times in this podcast, I've never considered that the real record. I've always looked at David D'Souza with 13 goals as the real mark to beat. Now, the problem with Steven scoring six goals is, yes, he's broken both records. Yes, he's the new all-time scorer for the GSL for one season. But the problem I have is this is kind of like deja vu all over again. It's another record where I'm not sure I can fully get behind it. Now, I've discussed this topic with a number of people, and a lot of people have messaged me about this. You know, how legit is this record? And there's basically two schools of thought. The first school of thought, which is mine, is that I don't like it when a player gets so many goals against one single team. I like the record to be beat with goals across multiple games, showing consistent performances, rather than just getting six goals in one game against a weakened Donna Paula. Now, the other school of thought is, listen, this is a team that everyone in the league is playing against. Everyone else has the same opportunity to score lots of goals. Why aren't they doing it? Just last week, when we played Donna Paula, we won 7-0. We had seven different goal scorers. Why wasn't one player able to score a hat trick, five goals, six goals, just like Steven did? It requires skill to score, even in these games. So those are the two main schools of thought. I'll leave it to you to decide where you fall. For me personally, I find it very hard. I go back and forth. I mean, I think he's going to win Golden Boot, so that's the acknowledgement he would get. I still don't think he's going to win the MVP this year, although he's in the running. My personal favorite would still be someone from Lotlum at this point. But I think the best way is for me to extend a challenge to Steven. And the challenge is this. Aguada has one game remaining against Bugmalo. If you got rid of the six goals he scored against Donna Paula, he would be at 12, meaning he'd be sitting one behind David D'Souza's old record of 13. If Steven, if you can score two goals in your last game of the season against Bugmalo, and it would be 20 for the season, it would do two things. First of all, you'd be the first player to ever go 20 and above goals. I mean, you're the first player to go above a 16, but you know what I mean? Like 20 sounds kind of impactful. Like the first person to ever go above the 10s. And secondly, you would have broken David D'Souza's record without requiring those goals against Donna Paula. Obviously, this is just a personal challenge I have for you, but if you're able to do this, you're able to, you know, shove it in my face, prove me wrong, I would have to give you full acknowledgement of the new record. I have a feeling you're not going to be able to do it. I have a feeling you're going to have the new record at 18, which is honestly a huge accomplishment, your first season back in the league, so huge congratulations for that. But I think some listeners identify with what I'm saying with, you know, six goals in one game, it just doesn't feel as good. But at the same time, as many other players have said, anyone else could have done this and no one else did, only you did. So congratulations to Steven on another huge performance and Aguada on another win. And our last game of the weekend was actually between Bugmalo and Mopsa. But rather than talk about this game myself, we're going to talk about everything Bugmalo related. So I'd like to welcome into the studio a very special guest, your vice president of the league and the coach of Bugmalo, Cyprian DeCruz. Sippy, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem. Thanks so much for coming on. We've been actually wanting to speak to you for a while and get someone from Bugmalo for a while. So tons to dive into. Let's start off with right away about Bugmalo as a team. As I mentioned before, you know, one of the founding teams, a real staple of the league. But unfortunately, in 2013, it all came to an end. And shockingly at the time, Bugmalo folded. So we've had Keegan previously on the show. He was on the team at the time. He's now on Lotulim to kind of give his side of the story and what happened. But we also want to give you a chance to say, from a coaching perspective and from an organizational perspective, what happened with Bugmalo? Where did it all go wrong? And why did you guys have to fold in 2013?
That's a great point. The reason it folded was we did not have our core players. Most of our players left the team. And in fact, the most important players left the team. And I did hear the podcast wherein Keegan Moraes, presently playing for Lotterly, stated that he was the one who was responsible to take the players to the other team because of various reasons that he stated. And I fully appreciate that, what he said. But as a coach of the Bugmalo team, also who managed the team for so many years and also played for the team, I was really disappointed in the sense, even till today, I think it's 2 or 3 weeks since the podcast, till today, I don't believe what Keegan said, because Keegan was a very, very important part of our team, and he was the captain of our team. We believed in him, we trusted him. He did whatever he could for the team. He was the most respected player on our team, and he led by example. So saying that, having said that, I still don't believe, and most of our senior players don't believe that it was Keegan who would do that. And if at all he did that, you know, it's totally disrespectful, because not even for a moment we thought it was Keegan who did that to the team. And then there was some youth, 4 or 5 young players that had joined the team that same year. They also left, and they were kind of left stranded because the person who brought the players to the team left the team, so they had no other choice but to leave the team as well. And that left us with only 6 players. And as you know, in the league, it's so hard to get players. And we thought, you know, for the first time, we thought it over, gave a lot of thought, tried to see if we could get some players, because it was really shocking to us. And as I said again, and I'll say it again, we still don't believe it was Keegan, because he was so respected in the team. He was a captain of our team, and he did his best to keep the team together.
So from your point of view, I mean, as you said, Keegan was a leader on the team, very well respected, not only by your team, but throughout the league. I think Keegan's one of the most well-respected players.
Right.
Where does your team and your senior members come down on this then? What do you attribute, or who do you attribute as responsible then for taking these players away from Bugmalo and causing you guys to fold?
I do not want to take any names at this point of time. It doesn't augur good for the league, and I don't want that to happen. But I just have to say straightforward that it wasn't Keegan. We trusted him so much, and if he did, that means he kind of went against all the trust that the team had on him. So we still respect him. He's one of the best players in the league. Time and again, he has shown in the league. Most respected player, very, very talented forward and scorer in the league. And so I just want to leave it at that. I don't want to discuss who was responsible.
That's fine. I'm glad you clarified that. And it's always good to get both sides of the story.
Correct.
Moving on, though, I mean, obviously we talked about the heartbreak of Bugmalo folding, how tough that was for everyone in the league, and especially with you having organized and grown up and played on that team. Luckily, this year, 2017, you know, we got the news that Bugmalo is coming back. So can you give us some insight? How were you guys able to bring Bugmalo back? How did you find enough players to make a team? And how did the return happen? How did this comeback happen?
Actually, it was Mickey and myself. We were just talking over, and there are a couple of other guys, senior guys in the background of the Bugmalo team, saying that, you know, we had such a great team. In fact, just to revive memories, Bugmalo is the only team that fielded almost 15 players from the village Bugmalo. And even this year, we have about 9 players from Bugmalo itself. Wow. I don't think anyone other than Aldona can match that particular number, players actually playing from their village. So the village people here who are residing here, they were after me and Mickey and Elton to get the team together. So what we did was we kind of just spread the word out, and we said that we'll field a team provided we have sensors and kind of backup from everyone that they will make practices commitment. That's what we are looking for, because I didn't want a team to come up and fold in the very next year or the same year having problems, right?
Yeah.
So we made sure that we had a commitment. We made sure that we had at least minimum of 16 players who are committed. And lo and behold, we have 20 players, and we had to turn down 4 other players. We couldn't accommodate them in the team. I guess the team joined us based on our reputation, based on our principle, what we believe in very strongly. And I'm glad that we have a team and we are back, and we hope to do well.
Yeah, exactly. I think the rest of the league is happy you guys are back. I mean, I've said on a previous podcast, for us, Alden, you know, one of our key playmakers, Elton, we found out he was leaving our team. So I asked, why is he leaving? Where is he going? And they said Bugmalo is actually coming back. And even though we were losing one of our star players, I was actually so happy with this news. Obviously, we want as many teams as we can in the league. And to bring back such a powerhouse like Bugmalo, it was always really good to hear. Now, that being said, you talked about principles. You talked about commitment. I talked to you early in the year when Bugmalo was losing the games at the beginning of the season heavily, you know, 5-0, 4-0, things like this. And you told me, you know, you weren't looking at the scores. You were looking at the performance and how you guys were playing, because you knew the results would come later on. Now, fast forward, we're almost at the end of the season, and you guys have been having much better results recently. You have had some losses, but they've been much closer, and you've actually recorded a number of wins, including a massive upset against Margao. Can you speak to kind of this progression throughout the season, and what are the goals of Bugmalo? What are you guys telling each other in your team meetings that your goals are for this season?
So let me start with the thing that I spoke to you about the goals being scored, and honestly, yes, we are not worried as a team management. We didn't actually, you know, care whether we lost by 5 goals or 8 goals. I think we lost a game with 9 goals, but it didn't matter to us. What I told the boys is just concentrate on what you're doing and what you're doing the best, and we learn from our mistakes. So what we have a thing in our team is that once the game is over, at the end of the game on a Sunday, when we come off the field, we just talk for just 5 minutes, not more than 5 minutes, maybe even less than 5 minutes. We get the team together, we just say good things about the team, and no more discussion. Because, you know, players come off the field, they are heated, and there's heated argument, and then the misunderstanding takes place. And that is my principle. I've always believed that as a player, as a coach, not only in Canada but elsewhere as well, that we don't discuss the game right after the game, but discuss it at the first practice that we get an opportunity to talk to. So having said that, that's what we do. So we didn't discuss the number of goals, but we did discuss the way it was scored against us, where we lacked, what mistakes we committed, and how we can improve. So I guess after having analyzed all those factors, team is improving, showing lots of improvement. We have talent on our team, but how we put it together, that's the question. And that is something, an opportunity for us to learn, and that's what we are doing at this moment.
Okay, good. So it sounds like you have like a good game plan. Looking forward to the playoffs. You know, there's only one game left in the season for pretty much all the teams. As far as you guys are concerned, you're pretty much locked in now to the 6th seed. So that means you'll be playing whoever finishes number 3 in the league. And at this point, that could be anyone from Aldana, Colva, Margao, Aguada. So you're really kind of waiting to see who you're going to play in the quarterfinals. From your point of view and your team's point of view, is there any, if you could have your pick between those 4 teams, who would you most like to play, and who would you least like to play?
I would love to have played Colva. I don't know if they are in the mix with us, because I see that team has great potential, and they also build from down. They have a lot of younger players. They are very fast, and they kind of match up to us. I know we lost the first leg with them 5-0. Second leg, we just lost barely by 1-2. So I feel they are very, very competitive, and that's a team that we kind of set an example. And other teams, they have got players who have been playing for so many years in the league. But this team, something that I look up to, and they have a very good goalkeeper. Unfortunately, he's injured and he's out of the tournament for now. So that's what I'm looking for. If not them, and then it could be either Aldona or Aguada. Anyone, we will play our best. We'll put off our best foot forward.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people are looking at Bugmalo to see, you know, you've improved over the year, but now the playoffs are coming. Can you have that big splash in the quarterfinals? Can you have that huge upset? Usually the 3-6 game is where the upset can happen, because 4-5, they're already pretty much even to start off with. And then 2-7 and 1-8, it's almost always the first place and second place teams that win. So everyone usually looks to that 3-6 matchup. Can the sixth seed upset the third seed? So that'll be your job this year once you get to the playoffs. So we'll see what happens, and we'll see who you line up against.
The other part is, you know, when you play a league game, both the teams are more relaxed. They know if they lose a point or they win a game, they still have another game to go to. But when you play a knockout, it's a different ball game, right? So there is no another match. If you lose this match, you're out. So the perception of the game and the style of the game changes. The tactics change. The coach and the senior players of the teams will change their tactics to make sure that this game is played only for today. You don't look beyond. So it's a different ball game altogether when you play a knockout stage.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I think you're talking more from a coach's perspective, where in the regular season, you're trying to create a system, you're trying to create a way of playing, and each week you're trying to get better and better. Whereas when it comes to the knockout stages, you make your entire game plan and playing style against the team you're facing, and you just do that and nothing but that for 80 minutes, 90 minutes. And then once the game's over, you completely erase what you did and you prepare for the next match, or else you're going home. So
exactly. You hit the nail on the head. That's what I exactly meant. I agree with you.
Playoffs is a completely different ballgame. That's actually why everyone loves it, and that's why we usually have good attendance, because anyone can beat anyone, and you know that once you have that huge upset, they're gone. Like, it's over. It's just a huge
It's over. And the preparation is also totally different, right? You play for the 80 minutes 90 minutes, and you play really hard because you give the best that you can. And then you move into the next match only after you win that particular match. So you don't look beyond.
Exactly. So definitely something to look forward to. The last thing I want to talk to you about before we let you go is, obviously, you know, you wear many hats in the league. You're the coach of Bugmalo. Your son plays on the team. You're also the vice president of the league, involved in the executive committee from the beginning, and you're actually the chairman of the disciplinary committee. So unfortunately, we don't have time to talk about all the different roles, but one thing we wanted to highlight was the disciplinary committee. So many people in the league, you know, they have misconceptions about how fines work, suspensions work, things like that. I just want to focus on one thing, which is suspensions. So just to catch people up and, you know, to say what I know, and you can clarify if I'm right or not. If a player receives 2 yellow cards in a game, they receive a red card, and they're suspended for the next game. And, you know, those cards can add up over time, and it's monitored by the league, how many yellow cards you're getting, how many red cards you're getting. But if a player receives a direct red card, the referee in his report can also indicate, you know, violent conduct or special notes, and that automatically triggers a disciplinary meeting. Can you clarify, is this the way it works? What is the system that you use? Because I think this is an error that a lot of players, you know, you hear this player was suspended for 2 games, this player was suspended for 1 game, and I think they need to realize that there is a system in place, and maybe you can just clarify that system for them.
Yeah, perfect, Wendell. I really appreciate the fact that you brought this up and that I am on a platform that I can discuss this. It's a great idea, and thank you for that. Just to let you know, as you rightly said, if a player gets a red card, even if he gets 2 yellows and a red, and if the referee puts in a report of the violent conduct, then the player is called for a disciplinary hearing. And the way this works is we have to wait for the report from the referee. Even though he writes on the game sheet, the player sent off for the violent conduct, there is a format, there is an original report that comes from the TSA, and which the referees have to forward to the Goan Soccer League. Once Everest, who's the president, gets this report from the referee, he forwards it to me. Then I will forward the report to the teams concerned. Say, for example, Aldona and Aguada, just for example. Both the teams get the report, and then we call for a disciplinary hearing meeting. As far as possible, I try and call the managers or even the players to find out if on a particular date if they're available, so they can come for the meeting. But it's really, really hard. That's for some reasons, none of the officials show up. So we have a hard time to get out of the eight teams, all the eight teams for the disciplinary hearing. And this is something that we are going to kind of put new rules in place for the next season. So what the process is, once the disciplinary hearing is called, the player in question or players in question, if there are more than one player, they are called for the hearing. Along with the officials, any one official for a respective team can come in. And I, as a chairman of the disciplinary committee, I will chair the meeting. And what we do is pass on the report again to all the members present at the meeting. And once they read the report, the player is given an opportunity. The player that suspended, he's given an opportunity to give his version. So the players give their version. This is what happened, the referee, whatever the reason may be. After that, the members that are there have an opportunity to ask the player if they feel any question anything that the player did not say, or if they have any doubt from the player and the report that they have in front of them, they can ask the player a question. And after that, the player in question and the member, the team official of that place, is told to leave the room. They go out. Then the committee members, say there are five members, they discuss among themselves, and then they come to a conclusion what kind of punishment that they should give. So as a chairman, I do not give any punishment. This is to be made very clear. In case there is a tie or in case there is a problem in deciding what kind of punishment, I just give my suggestions, but I do not, I cannot say, okay, you give this player five games or you give this player seven games. And all those who have sat in the meeting in the past will vouch for that. All I tell them that this particular, if the foul was committed, for what is the reason, how difficult it is, what is the referee's position in this, just technical answers I give them, nothing else. So after that is done, once a decision is taken, we end the meeting, then I send the letter to the respective teams that so-and-so player from their team has been suspended based on so-and-so article, so-and-so, and the fine so required. And all the managers of the teams are sent the copies as well.
So So as we said before, it's a pretty regulated system. It's pretty... it's standardized, which is the best part, I guess, is what you would say, is that no matter who the team, who the player is, it's the same process that happens. And
yeah, and on that note, sorry, Wendell, sorry about that. On that note, I just want to clarify here as well. Now that Bognala has a team, if one of my players suspended, gets a violent conduct, right? I'm out of the meeting. I do not chair. I'm not part of anything. So you understand, right? I'm not
that,
part of
there's
the
a conflict of interest there. So you remove yourself.
Correct. I'm not part of the disciplinary hearing. Even the notice will be sent by someone else, either Roy, Mickey, or Everest, one of them, but I will be out of it.
If there's any perception of a conflict of interest, just remove yourself from the situation completely. That way people can't say it was biased or anything like that.
Yeah, so but the question remains here. As I said to you, at the next meeting we are going to revive the question always remains here, is that one team official has to attend the disciplinary meeting, because it's very, very important. It's critical that the decisions come from all the teams, not just one or three. And then comes the question of favoritism, right? Someone will say, okay, because this team doesn't like us, they gave the punishment. It's not that. But it amounts to that in the sense the other teams did not take part in the disciplinary hearing. So my suggestion at the next meeting for next year is going to be that probably we will have to increase our fines or something. We have to do something so that all the teams take part.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's big decisions being made. It can impact a player season, the whole team
season. Exactly.
We really need input from all the teams, as you said, to get not only make sure there's no bias or favoritism, but make sure everyone has a say.
Right.
So that's all we have time for today, unfortunately. Before I let you go, On behalf of the whole Goan League, you know, we really got to thank you and the executive committee. As I've said, you know, if anyone ever complains about fines or suspensions or schedules or whatever, I always just ignore them, because the truth is, without the executive, this league wouldn't exist. And without this league, first of all, I guess from a personal level, if the league doesn't exist, I guess the podcast doesn't exist. I wouldn't have anything to talk about.
That's true.
So, you know, thanks to you and the executive, obviously, for keeping the league going strong. And last question for you before you leave is, if Bugmalo does not win the championship this year, who do you think is going to win the championship?
I would say it's a toss-up between Aldona and Aguada. And I'm just saying this based on the games that I've watched and based on what the knockout brings to the table. I never go by the games in the league. The matches in the league, they're totally different. The knockout is totally different as well. And as I see, both these teams have got players for a knockout. And Aguada has shown that over the years. They have come out strong, and so also Aldona. But unfortunately, Aldona has not reached that the finals. I think they did 1 year, and Bugmalo beat them by a score of 2-1. So
yeah, you have to bring that up.
No, just to let you know, right? They have that. They have the potential, and they have the team this year. So, and again, knockout game is totally different. So, with due respect to Lotterly, who are I guess unbeaten in this league this year. Due respect to them. The knockout is a totally different game, so it's going to be a toss-up between Aguada and Aldona.
Well, I mean, you're giving us a 50% chance, and as you said, we haven't made the final since 2007, so I'll take those odds. Thanks so much, Sippy, for coming on the show. Really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you, Randall. Thank you for having me on the show, and good luck to your podcast, okay? And good luck to all the members of all the teams in the last game, as well as the knockout stage, and hopefully we maintain the discipline that we've been having all these years, and let's have a great Goan Soccer League, and let's finish it with flying colors. Thank you so much.
All right, thanks to Sippy for coming on the show. He was such a great guest and a great guy to have on. That actually, we forgot to talk about the Bugmalo versus Mopsa game. We were so busy talking about all those other great topics. So just to recap, Bugmalo did win that game against Mopsa with a score of 2-0, with goals from Roy Fernandez and Naga Adrian Rayavirapu. So I'm slowly getting better at your name, Naga or Adrian. I'm not sure which name you go by. So keep up the good work there. This episode's already pretty long, so I'm just going to quickly speed through the predictions. I think Aguada's going to beat Bugmalo. I think Colva is going to beat Donna Paula. I think Aldona is going to beat Mopsa, and I think Lotulim is going to beat Margao. That's all we have time for this week. Thanks for tuning in. Appreciate the support as usual. Hit me back with emails and messages. A lot of different topics discussed on this episode. I'm dying to hear from all you guys. TheGSLPodcast@gmail.com. Until then, we'll be back next week with a brand new podcast.